Birthday Brothers. I spend all day thinking about what kind of table my brother Sean and I will be seated at tonight in the Quilted Giraffe. Since it's his birthday, and he happens to be in the city, my father's accountant, Charles Conroy, and the trustee of his estate, Nicholas Lee, both called last week, and mutually suggested that it would be in everyone's best interest to use this date as an excuse to find out what Sean's doing with his life, and perhaps to ask a pertinent question or two. And though both of these men I know despise Sean, and that the feeling is unambiguously reciprocated, it would be a good idea to get him to come to dinner, and as a lure, as bait in case he refuses, by mentioning, not lightly, that something bad has happened. I was on a conference call to Conroy and Lee last Wednesday afternoon. Something bad? Like what? I asked, trying to concentrate on the numbers sliding across my monitor, while simultaneously waving Jean away, even though she was holding a sheaf of papers I was supposed to sign. That all Michelob breweries in the Northeast are closing? That 976 Bimbo has stopped making house calls? No, Charles said, then quietly mentioned, tell him your mother is worse. I mulled over this tactic, then said, he might not care. Tell him... Nicholas paused, then cleared his throat and rather delicately proposed, it has to do with her estate. I looked up from the monitor, lowering my Wayfarer aviator sunglasses, and stared at Jean, then lightly fingered the Zagat guy that sat next to the monitor. Pastels would be impossible. Ditto Dorsia. Last time I called Dorsia, someone had actually hung up on me, even before I asked, well, if not next month, how about January? And though I have vowed to get a reservation at Dorsia one day, if not during this calendar year, then at least before I'm 30, the energy I would spend attempting this feat isn't worth wasting on Sean. Besides, Dorsia is far too chic for him. I want to make him endure this dinner, to not be allowed the pleasure of being distracted by hard bodies on their way to Nell's. Somewhere with a men's room attendant, so he would have to be painfully subtle about what is now, I'm sure, his chronic cocaine usage. I handed the Zagat to Jean and asked her to find the most expensive restaurant in Manhattan. She made a 9 o'clock reservation at the Quilted Giraffe. Things are worse at Sandstone, I tell Sean later this afternoon, around 4 o'clock. He's staying in our father's suite at the Carlisle. MTV is blasting in the background. Other voices shout over its din. I can hear a shower running. Like what? Mom made her pillow? What? I think we should have dinner, I say. Dominique, cool it, he says. Then places his hand over the phone and mutters something, muffled. Hello, Sean. What's going on? I'm asking. I'll call back. He hangs up. I happen to like the tie I bought Sean at Paul Smith last week, and I've decided not to give it to him, though the idea of the asshole, say, hanging himself with it pleases me greatly. In fact, I decide to wear it to the Quilted Giraffe tonight. Instead of the tie, I'm going to bring him a Casio QD150 quick dialer combination wristwatch, calculator, and data bank. It dials touch-tone phones sonically when held up to a mouthpiece, and it stores up to 50 names and numbers. I start laughing while putting this useless gift back into its box, thinking to myself that Sean doesn't even have 50 acquaintances. He couldn't even name 50 people. The Patty Winter show this morning was about salad bars. Sean calls at 5 from the Racquet Club and tells me to meet him at Dorsia tonight. He just talked to Bryn, the owner, and reserved the table at 9. My mind is a mess. I don't know what to think or how to feel. The Patty Winter show this morning was about salad bars. Later, Dorsia, 9:30. Sean is half an hour late. The maitre d' refuses to seat me until my brother arrives. My worst fear, a reality. A prime booth across from the bar sits there, empty, waiting for Sean to grace it with his presence. My rage is controlled barely by a Xanax and an Absolute on the rocks. While taking a piss in the men's room, I stare into a thin, web-like crack above the urinal's handle, and think to myself that if I were to disappear into that crack, say somehow miniaturize and slip into it, the odds are good that no one would notice I was gone. No one would care. In fact, some, if they notice my absence, might feel an odd, indefinable sense of relief. This is true. The world is better off with some people gone. Our lives are not all interconnected. That theory is a crock. Some people truly do not need to be here. In fact, one of them, my brother, Sean, is sitting in the booth he reserved when I come out of the men's room after I phoned the apartment and checked for messages. Evelyn's suicidal. Courtney wants to buy a chow. Lewis suggests dinner on Thursday. Sean is already chain-smoking, and I'm thinking to myself, damn, why didn't I request a table in the non-smoking section? He's shaking hands with the maitre d' as I walk over, but doesn't even bother to introduce us. I sit down and nod. Sean nods, too, having already ordered a bottle of Cristal, knowing that I'm paying. Also knowing, I'm sure, that I know he doesn't drink champagne. Sean, who is now 23, went to Europe last fall. Or at least, this is what Charles Conroy said Sean told him. And though Charles did receive a substantial bill from the Plaza Athénée, the signature on the receipts didn't match Sean's, and no one really seemed to know how long Sean was actually in France, or even if he had spent real time there. Afterwards, he bummed around, then re-enrolled at Camden for about 3 weeks. Now he's in Manhattan before flying to either Palm Beach or New Orleans. Predictably, tonight he's alternately moody and insistently arrogant. He has also, I've just noticed, started to pluck his eyebrows. He no longer has only one. The overwhelming urge I have to mention this to him is quelled only by squeezing my hand into a fist so tightly that I break the skin on the palm of my hand, and the biceps of my left arm bulge, then rip through the cloth of the linen Armani shirt I have on. "So, you like this place?" he asks, grinning. "My favorite," I joke through clenched teeth. "Let's order," he says, not looking at me, waving to a hard body who brings over two menus and a wine list while smiling appreciatively at Sean, who in turn ignores her totally. I open the menu, and damn it, it's not prefix, which means that Sean orders the lobster with caviar and peach ravioli as an appetizer, and the blackened lobster with strawberry sauce as an entree, the two most expensive items on the menu. I order the quail sashimi with grilled brioche and the baby softshell crabs with grape jelly. A hard body opens the bottle of Cristal and pours it into crystal tumblers, which I guess is supposed to be cool. After she leaves, Sean notices me staring at him in a vaguely disapproving manner. "What?" he asks. "Nothing," I say. "What is it, Patrick?" He spaces the words out obnoxiously. "Lobster to start with, and for an entree. What do you want me to order, the Pringle potato chip appetizer? Two lobsters?" "These matchbooks are slightly larger than the lobster they serve here," he says. "Besides, I'm not that hungry." "Even more of a reason. I'll fax you an apology." "Still, Sean, rock and roll." I know, rock and roll, deal with it, right?" I say, holding up a hand while sipping the champagne. I wonder if it's not too late to ask one of the waitresses to bring a piece of cake over here with a candle in it, just to embarrass the shit out of him, to put the little bastard in his place. But instead, I put the glass down and ask, "Listen, so..." Oh, Jesus. I breathe in, then force out, "What did you do today?" "Played squash with Richard Lindquist." He shrugs contemptuously. "Bought a tuxedo." "Nicholas Lee and Charles Conroy want to know if you're going to the Hamptons this summer." "Not if I can help it," he says, shrugging. A blonde girl, close enough to physical perfection, with big tits and a Les Miserables playbill in one hand, wearing a long rayon matte jersey evening dress by Michael Kors from Bergdorf Goodman, Manolo Blahnik shoes, and gold-plated chandelier earrings by Ricardo Saberno, stops by to say hello to Sean. And though I would fuck this girl, Sean ignores her flirtatious manner and refuses to introduce me. During this encounter, Sean is completely rude, yet the girl leaves smiling, raising a gloved hand. "We'll be at Mortimer's. Later." He nods, staring at my water glass, then waves down a waiter and orders a scotch, straight. Who was that? I ask. Some babe who went to Stevens. Where'd you meet her? Playing pool at MK. He shrugs. Is she a DuPont? I ask. Why? Do you want her number? No, I just want to know if she's a DuPont. She might be. I don't know. He lights another cigarette, a Parliament, with what looks like an 18-carat gold cigarette lighter from Tiffany's. She might be a friend of one of the DuPonts. I keep thinking of reasons why I'm sitting here, right now, tonight, with Sean, at Dorsia, but none come to mind. Just this infinitely recurring zero floats into view. After dinner, the food is small, but very good. Sean touches nothing. I tell him that I have to meet Andrea Rothmere at Nell's, and if he wants espresso or dessert, he should order it now since I have to be downtown by midnight. Why rush? He asks. Nell's isn't that hip anymore. Well, I falter, quickly regain composure. We're just going to meet there. We're really going to... My mind races, lands on something. Chernobyl. I take another sip of champagne from the tumbler. Big yawn. Really big yawn, he says, scanning the room. Or Contra Club East, I can't remember. Out, Stone Age, prehistory. He laughs cynically. Tense pause. How would you know? Rock and roll, he shrugs. Deal with it. Well, Sean, where do you go? Immediate answer. Petty's. Oh, yes, I murmur, having forgotten that it was already open. He whistles something, smokes a cigarette. We're going to a party Donald Trump's having. I lie. Big fun, very big fun. Donald's a nice guy, you should meet him, I say. I'll introduce you to him. Really? Sean asks. Maybe hopefully. Maybe not. Yeah, sure. Oh, right. Now, by the time I get the check, let's see, pay for it, take a cab back to my place, it will be almost midnight, which doesn't give me enough time to return yesterday's videotapes. So if I don't stop by my place, I can just go in and rent another videotape. Though on my membership, doesn't it say that you can only take out 3 at a time? So this means last night I took out 2, Body Double and Blonde Hot Dead. So I could rent one more, but I've forgotten I'm also part of the Gold Circle membership plan, which means that if I've spent $1,000, at least, in the last 6 months, then I'm allowed to rent as many videos on any given night as I want, but if I still have 2 out now, that might mean I can't take any more out, Gold Circle member or not, if the other ones haven't been returned, but... Damien. You're Damien, I think I hear Sean mutter. What did you say? I ask, looking up. I didn't hear you. Nice tan, he says. I said, nice tan. Oh, I say, still confused about the video thing. I look down. At what, my lap? Thanks. Rock and roll. He stamps his cigarette out. Fumes rise from the crystal ashtray, then die. Sean knows I know he can probably get us into Petty's, which is the new Norman Prager Club on 59th, but I'm not going to ask him, and he's not going to offer. I place my Platinum American Express card over the check. Sean's eyes are glued to a hard body by the bar in a Thierry Mugler wool jersey dress and a Claude Montana scarf, sipping from a champagne tumbler. When our waitress comes by to pick up the check and the card, I shake my head, no. Sean's eyes finally fall on it, for a second, maybe more, and I wave the waitress back over and allow her to take it.